Hey everybody, Adam Stott here. Thanks for checking out my podcast, Business Growth Secrets. You're absolutely in the right place. This podcast is going to reveal to you all of the secrets that you've been looking to discover that are going to allow you to cure your cash flow problems, attain more clients, bring in more leads for your business, and create systems and processes that give you the growth that you want. You are going to discover the business growth secrets you have been looking for that I've used to sell over £50 million worth of products and services on social media and help clients everywhere to grow their businesses on demand. So let's get started on the Business Growth Secrets podcast.
Hi, everybody. Wow. I've been instructed to speak into this like a rapper. And I'm not sure whether I'm going to be asked to rap, but I really have to say heads up as not part of my what I'm going to be able to offer today.
Well, look, you know, I was just given a big intro there. You've achieved some amazing things. I've took that straight off the Telegraph, actually.
That's true. That picture is a little while ago. Oh, how weird. I'm wearing the same top. I just want to confirm I've actually owned more than one item of clothing. Well, as if by magic, yes. I wanted to make sure people could recognise me, so I wore the same thing today.
Which is brilliant. And look, I think that achieved some amazing things. I'm really, really looking forward to this conversation. I didn't want to give too much about what we just spoke about, because I think you've got a really important message actually today around female entrepreneurship in Britain, and so much more. But you took a company public at 29, which is incredible. Should we give a big round of applause for that, right? Huge success. What got you to that point, Emma? How did we build towards taking why were you youngest person ever to take a company public? How did we get there? What was that journey like?
First of all, I can tell I'm going to feel very good about myself by the time I leave. So thank you for having me today. I'm having a very long day already, a long Monday. So thank you. I mean, look, when people hear that have never met me, if it was the other way around, I would, and I'm not saying I am, I'm just saying I would think, oh, she must, I don't know, been a whiz kid, done something amazing about economics at university. Just for the avoidance of doubt, is none of those things. Not that I didn't pay attention schoolish and get some good grades, but the actual reason that I started my professional entrepreneurship journey on the stock exchange was merely because it was actually all I knew or all I understood at that point as to how you raise money. My dad, I'm the first in my family to go to university. My family come from Eastern Europe. my father worked very hard to give me the opportunities that I have. And on the way to school every day from the age of four, my dad and I used to play a game. Well, we used to play lots of games, right? We played What's the Capital City and How Many Red Cars Can You See? And all the games, if anyone has kids they need to keep busy, tend to play. But we also used to play Guess the Share Price. This is 1,000% true. And sometimes people think I'm joking, but it's totally true. And my dad bought, you know, a couple of £100 worth of shares, some of the privatizations in the 90s and companies that actually don't exist today. And he had a couple of shares. And on the way to school in the morning, we'd have a copy of the paper that got dropped off in the house, because back in the day, that's how you got that. And my early memories of my school journey are opening up the Financial Times and it being really big and flopping in my face and taking about 10 minutes to just get the paper open. And I think clearly this is just how my dad kept me busy for 35 minutes on the way to school every day. But the long story short, it kind of transpired into I got to university and it was the first year that they offered student loans. So I took out my student loans and traded them on the stock market. I had £2,500 in a bank account I didn't know about, that my grandparents and my family always put things like birthday money and all that sort of stuff like through the course of my life. And I went into Barclays Bank in the third week of university, having just had my student loan, and was told, oh yes, of course, if you're over 18 with your passport, you can access that. So I had that too. So actually the way I got started in life was playing that with my dad, trading student loans at university and getting internships in my first year to large city institutions I'd read about in the newspaper, because I sent them a copy of my trading sheet from my trading in my first year of college. So that gives us a long story short, but it gives a tiny bit of context. I just was like, well, the stock market is how you do stuff. And it wasn't an ivory tower, because it's a thing that I just did with my dad every day. So when I first thought about setting up a cash shell, aggregating some businesses, acquiring some stuff. I'm like, how might one do that? Well, obviously, one floats a company on the stock exchange. When I look back now at the chutzpah that I had, you know, I think if I had been better informed, I definitely wouldn't have done it. But I just thought that was the way you do it. So I did.
I mean, pretty incredible and actually really good lesson for children, actually, isn't it?
If anyone does this with their children and loses money, I'm taking no responsibility for it. So do not get me
it's
in
not
trouble.
Financial advice, right?
Correct.
But I think that what a great lesson to be able to educate your children about financial times and things like that. I mean, who finds reading the Financial Times now difficult?
Well, you wouldn't read the FT now, yeah. Right? I mean, reading the FT then was probably the same as going on your iPhone now and picking out an app that you quite like to use for learning something about finance or business or whatever else it was, right? My dad used to say to me, I don't know whether anyone does or did ever read the FT, but on the back page, there's something called the Lex column. And my dad used to say to me, this is the gossip column about companies. So, you know, my mum would read some crappy thing at the airport with, I don't know, Hello magazine or something or other. And my dad would be like, well, that's the gossip pages for businesses. So, I mean, nice. You know, in many ways, that's just kind of what there was. I'm obviously far younger than I look. But back in the day, that was, you know, that was really the place in the morning that you could get that information. We didn't have an iPhone. We didn't have a car phone. So I think now there's infinitesimally more ways to digest this. And these days, you know, I look with my daughter who really likes Roblox, and they IPO'd recently, and she obviously wants to spend all her money on crappy fluffy toys, which obviously she has plenty of, but I'm like, there's only so many you need. So now I can show her how to buy, you know, $5 worth of stock without it costing £50 in fees and stuff. So actually the world today is infinitely easier to educate yourself, I think, to get advice, to find your crowd, to learn how to do things. But, you know, when I first set up my business, it wasn't even that long ago, but there weren't really wasn't the same information sites, apps. I mean, you know, anybody, I know lots of people here either have their own business thinking about setting one up or been doing it for a while. You know, the dearth of information you can get now at your fingertips is incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. Absolutely. So in terms of you then taking that and turning it into a business, what were the steps from having that early stuff to actually going out and building a business for you, Emma? How did it transpire from there?
Well, look, over the years, I've learned to tell a long story short. So long story short, I watched my dad build a business. I mean, my father always told us that we kind of had to, he really believed in learning to teach us to kind of teaching us that we should roll our sleeves up. So, I mean, I had a job from 16 at our local Boots, and then for an extra 20p an hour, went to McDonald's, got to university.
On your Wikipedia, right?
I don't know, but yeah, probably is on there. and then there was an extra 40p when I worked for All Bar One. So, you know, I mean, I've always worked. And I've always, I think, really been attracted to the concept of entrepreneurship. My father's side of the family came here from Ukraine. And my grandpa, my great-grandpa, as you say to my grandpa and to my dad, so these things get passed down to you, that if you work for someone else, you're always a week away from being fired. And, you know, that particularly resonated for my family because they were, you know, they were from a very persecuted group and running from hate. So obviously being a bit of independence made that a little bit safer back in the day. But I think the kind of concept of entrepreneurship was just always around in our house. And, you know, if your dad reads you the FT, have you? Of four, and you're talking about share prices. Business is just what we talk about at our sort of family table. I mean, when we all get together, that's what we all talk about. My dad is 80 and he took over a small cash shell 10 days ago because he's decided he'd like to do it one more time. So, I mean, you can imagine the kind of family that I have exposure to.
He just took over a small
listed vehicle.
Oh, really?
Cool. Yeah, yeah. More group or something. Yeah. Smallest cash channel on AIM. He's decided he'd like to do it again. And I'm like, that's actually probably just gives people a sense of what I've grown up with. My dad is always like, keep your mind busy, have a really good go. If you work hard, good things will come to you. You know when to stop if good things aren't happening. So, I mean, you know, how did I get here is a really big question. But I've been working really hard for a very, very long time. And I guess every time I do something or kind of cash in a business for the next one, it gets a bit bigger and better and bigger and better. And now, obviously, the software company that I run now is, you know, we're global. We've got customers all over the world. And, you know, if you'd said that to me when I was starting my journey years ago, that some of the things that I'd done, some of the people I would have met would have been what happened, I wouldn't have believed you. But I don't know, all started with reading the share prices and learning to earn a living. And my dad saying, if you want a car, then I'll get you a third hand car, but I'll double what you earn at McDonald's. So, you know, I've got a real work ethic, I guess.
Absolutely. And that first business, what was it? Give it a big round of
applause. That's very nice. Thank you. What a nice bunch of people. I've had a very long weekend and a very long day, yeah. So this is very well received. Thank you. I know clearly I'm going to be asked for a lot of favours on the way out as a result.
The first business you started, the first one that you took public at 29, what was that business?
So actually what I did was I took over a cash shell, which is, for those that don't know, is effectively like buying a box that you can put companies into, but it happens to be on the stock market. Raising money is something I'm infinitesimally more familiar with. But when I first decided that, so I started my professional life. So post McDonald's, post All Bar One, post waitressing, post call centering, post all those sorts of things. My first proper job was in an investment bank doing mergers and acquisitions. So lots that I learned there, very, very different skills. And when I was heading in for my first business, the only way I knew that I could go and buy companies and pay for it, as far as I was concerned, was I needed to have something on the stock exchange so that people who bought shares could buy shares in my company so that I'd have enough cash in the company to buy businesses. I mean, literally as simple as that. I mean, it's easy to paraphrase a story 10, 20 or 30 years later, but really that was essentially the concept and it'd be no different now. So I went about looking for a cash shell. I was like, well, that's what I need to do. So that's essentially, as a short story, is what I did. Wasn't quite as easy as that. Found some bad ones, found some badly behaved people, had some mixed experiences, raised the money to take over a cash shell the night before. About 20% of the funding never came through. So I had to find, you know, hundreds of thousands by the next day, which was not something at the best of times anyone really wants to find themselves with. So we haven't got all day here, but just for the avoidance of doubt, it was an absolute nightmare. And there are hundreds of obstacles and hurdles. But, you know, it did happen.
Yeah.
That was business number one.
What was interesting that you said that you worked in a call centre first? How long did you do that for?
I have done so many jobs at different stages of my career to earn extra money. I did that at night. I've had, I'm sure like lots of people here, I had day jobs and then night jobs sometimes because I wanted to earn more money. Or, you know, I mean, my first year of uni, last year of school, I worked in McDonald's. My first year of uni, I worked in All Bar One principally. My first summer holidays of my first year of university, when everyone was working in fairly crappy jobs, I decided a couple of months before summer started that I just didn't want to work in McDonald's or in a bar. And I'd been reading, so along with reading, doing guess the share price and trading shares, I must also admit to having been quite a bad student at university. I wasn't terribly good at attending, but I have, by the way, I have many failings, many things I'm terrible at, but I'm going to just sweep all of those under the carpet and talk about all the things I'm good at today. I've got a really good memory. So generally, if I read a book or hear something, I generally remember it pretty quickly. So I didn't do much attending. So every day at university, I didn't really get up very early. Met my friends for lunch at the student union, read the FT, was the only person that bought the FT from the student union newsagent. The newsagent used to get it for me. And then I played Street Fighter for most of the afternoon, which if anyone knows that or has kids that plays computer games. So that was essentially it. But we was reading the FT every day. So I wrote 12 letters to 12 banks to ask them for an internship in my first year of summer. And I remember going to the University Career Service, who I had many bad experiences with, I can remember. And one of them was, I remember asking them, you know, for some advice about how I could get an internship in the City of London in finance. And they said, well, you definitely can't do that till you've got a degree. Now, I mean, I was much shyer, much more reserved when I was younger. I was not what you see before you now, but I don't think no ever really worked terribly well for me then. So I just wrote 12 letters to 10 banks and I attached my trading sheets. Now, I'd only been trading a small number of shares because I didn't have a lot of money, but I was trading things like Pizza Express, which I knew, which at the time was traded and I knew really well because I'm allergic to milk and eggs. And they actually, if anyone here has an allergy, you may know they're really good at handling allergies. So all my life, if I'm going out with my friends or when I was at university, when I didn't have any money and, you know, a fancy night out was Pizza Express, I knew every Pizza Express in the country because that's where I'd been eating for years. So, for example, that was like one of my major holdings. So I sent my CV, my trading sheet, and a cover letter to like 12 heads of banks I'd read about in the newspaper. So the way I kind of got started from a city perspective was I got offered jobs that summer. So that was really how I got started. And, you know, they offered £350 a week to work. And all my friends were like going interrailing and all this stuff, or working in, you know, baling hay in their local village or something. And I was like, I really honestly thought I had made the big time at that point. So, I mean, I started my city career essentially then. But in between all of that, when you're at college or I studied abroad, you know, I had to earn a living. So I had call centres. I worked in the Virgin Megastore in Paris, stacking CDs, you name it. And I always say, and I say to my kids that, you know, that's the stuff that probably explains the resilience I have as an entrepreneur.
That's why I asked the question, because of the resilience that can be built in a call centre when you get told to go away constantly all day long. I think it's actually a good thing for a business owner to actually have been through that level of rejection to toughen them up, right?
Look, we are all a product of our experiences. Mm. That was a product of that experience for me, and I am very persistent and very resilient, and that certainly did help. The other things that helped in those times, though, was all the people, a little bit like today. You know, for me, the best thing about those experiences, or even now, I was saying to your colleague before I came in, you know, the best things for me are having gangs of people that understand what I'm going through. You know, I've got WhatsApp groups of female founders that are building global SaaS companies. We all totally get it, and we can all explain that. And again, at the call centre, you know, I met people I'm still friends with that were sending an amazing lady who's currently building wells across Kenya, but at the time lived here and was sending money back home, so she worked nights while she was studying. So actually, I met amazing people. I'm still in touch with some of the people from McDonald's that I work with. and yeah, I mean, look, we all come to wherever we are. It's not exactly a profound statement. We all come to the experiences where we are from the experience that we've had. And I guess I just don't mind rolling my sleeves up. But that has downsides. You know, sometimes I'm not the best at divesting things.
A really key point. How much do you think the work ethic plays a part in business success? And obviously we've got lots of business owners in the room. Lots of business owners are different. We've got some really successful people that are crushing it. We've got people that are starting out, people in the middle. We've got lots of different things. How much would you say work ethic plays a part in the success of the business?
No one size fits all. There's times to stereotype and times not to. Sometimes you ride a wave. Sometimes you're really lucky. You know, so I don't know that there's any recipe, but I do know that if you work really hard and you've got something good going on, then you're going to do better than the person next to you that doesn't work as hard. Or rather, that's how I've carried myself. I will say that that's not necessarily the right way to approach it, because I am often completely exhausted, don't spend enough time with my family and a bunch of other stuff. So I don't know that that's even necessarily the right way. It's just the way that I've done things. And all I can do today is speak about myself and my journey. I work really hard all of the time. Yeah. But then again, it's normal to me. I tell you, a few years ago, I dropped my dad off at home on a Sunday afternoon, and he said to me, I'm going to go write a paper. It's like a Sunday, right? He likes a bit of golf. And it suddenly, that was the moment where everything twigged about the way that I work. Because that's, I mean, it's completely normal. I said to my dad, you know, take some time off, have a bit of a break, you know, watch some telly. He's like, no, I've got work to do. And I realized actually, so this, the kind of what surrounds me is that. That is how my family works. So that is how I work. Yeah. But as I say, it's not necessarily the right way. And as I get older, I often think to myself,
could have done it differently? Yeah.
Are there better ways to do it? What does success mean? And like, what am I racing towards? So I just want to temper what I do with flagging that if other people don't necessarily do that or don't believe in working all hours of the day, then quite frankly, you're probably infinitesimally more sensible than me and should be up here talking to me about how to work.
Great stuff. And what we've got launching for what you've got launching over the next few days, you said big Daily Mail spread. I think there's some really important info about female entrepreneurship. And obviously, having been a very successful female entrepreneur, somebody that is very young, taking companies public, had some amazing results. You've got some really good stuff to share around that. And obviously, we've got a lot of female entrepreneurs. Where are my female entrepreneurs?
Hey!
Loads of them in the room, right?
Sorry, boys. Well, look, I'm unaccustomed to speaking to rooms full of lots of women, to be honest with you, apart from my close friends, because it's generally not the place that I find myself. Yeah, I mean, happy to share a little bit about what I'm doing, which might at the very least resonate with them and resonate with the men too, because the issue for that, there's a lot of issues around female funding, female entrepreneurship and female equity, which are not a women problem. If you've got sisters, mothers, children, grandchildren, you name it. So I've lived a life where I've raised quite a lot of money in different ways, right? Stock market, private. I now have a company that's kind of, we've raised, not the hugest, well, it depends what huge is, but in the context of a sort of B2B tech company, we've raised about 25 million. Some from funds.
Some of that.
Comes at a price, everybody. Everything comes at a price. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, I don't know anything about, has anyone here raised any money for their business? Is anyone here planning on raising any money for their business? Yeah. So look, wherever we are in the world and whatever we all do, we all need some financing. I mean, raising money for your business, frankly, is asking your mum, your dad, your brother, or some overdraft, as far as I'm concerned. So that's the beginning of a raising money journey. And it's not always the right way to do things, but I run a software company where we service huge companies and we have massive costs to do so. So I certainly, to cash flow my business on an annual basis is very expensive. And I certainly from day one couldn't do that myself. But a lived experience for female entrepreneurs is that 1.8% of the money that goes from venture capital into businesses in the world goes to women. So 98.2% of money from financial institutions like venture capital goes into male-led business and mixed teams, and 1.8%. It's gone up from 1.2%, and lots of people are pleased about that, and I find that very irritating. Paces of change are often glacial. I think that might be sort of even whatever's less than glacial might be what that statistic is. So amongst my friends who are growing businesses, some are raising money, raising software companies typically that are raising money from venture capital, from angels. Lots of us don't feel disadvantaged or like we can't walk into a room. But if a man is 48 times more likely to raise money, and that has been the case year on year on year on year, I have to admit to myself that I'm walking into a room disadvantaged. The odds are stacked against me before I start, and for every other woman. I've been watching this for a long time, and the top-down change hasn't really come. Whether it's for a business like mine or for anything anyone does here, there have been task forces and government movements and signing up to codes of conduct. And it's really, everyone's really clear what the problem is. There just hasn't been a solution. And I, every couple of years, get a bit cross about something, and in a moment of madness, because I've got too much to do anyway, decide to just have a go at doing something to try and change what's going on. I did something last about 2 years ago, focused on refugees when the Ukrainian war broke out, that was to do with getting jobs. And I thought, I'm not ever doing anything like that again, because I'm got a day job and a family. Anyway, this morning I launched something called Be My Angel. Essentially, the only way that I believe that funding is going to get solved, particularly for women, is ground up, bottom up. It's clearly not getting solved top down. I have a disproportionate amount of angel investors in my business, so that's individuals. So do a lot of the women I know. And I think people often think that angel investment is a bit dragon's den. You've got to have hundreds of thousands or millions, put huge checks in, and that's how you can fund a business. But it's actually not the case at all. Anyone can kind of be an angel investor. And, you know, in my business, in order to get 50-50 male, female gender balance on my shareholder base, which I've done, I've had to get crowds of women together. And then one man writes a check quite often, because women don't invest like men, even if they've got the money. So the Be My Angel campaign that I've launched is really to activate normal people to become angel investors. And it's why for this week and the next 5 weeks, I'm talking to audiences that are outside what I do all day long. Because what I want to highlight is, number one, you might be thinking of raising some money at some point. And number two, probably everyone here puts a tiny little bit away for a pension, or a tiny little bit away for savings, or a little tiny bit in the stock market, or a bit with an IFA. And none of that gets to female founders. So pension fund money doesn't get to female founders. The funds that you'll invest in won't reach female founders. And incidentally, women on a lower cash base typically make more revenue and exit for more money. So we're already great investment, generally speaking. So effectively, the campaign, along with lots of other people...
The stats are women typically that are invested in produce outsized returns. Is that the stats?
Correct.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey. I mean, there's stats everywhere. I mean, if anyone needs... I've got stats coming out of my ears about women outperforming. So essentially, I want everyone to think about that, because either you might want to do that with a little bit of your cash. Maybe you've got a daughter that you... puts a bit of savings aside. You know, crowdfunding is typically something that's done for B2C businesses, things that reach retailers, a bank, something everybody knows, a pizza restaurant. It's just not something that B2B, so corporate businesses, typically do. We're all advised not to do it. It's not of stature. I've got a business that's of scale, not sort of a tiny startup. It's very un-me to do something like that. But I figure if I can do a slice of my fundraiser as a crowdfund, anybody else can. So I'm starting it off by I am doing a slice of my next big institutional round as a crowdfund on Crowdcube. I'm partnering with them. One woman a month is going to do a part of their raise for the next year on Crowdcube. We all have track records.
Can you explain Crowdcube
for... I will do.
That'd be great.
Yeah, well, does anyone here not know what crowdfunding is? And please put your hand up and don't feel embarrassed. Thank you. So crowdfunding is the old school concept is if you were living in a town or a village and you really needed everyone to chip in for something, or crowdfunding is if you're in the office and someone's leaving and you say, we're going to buy them all a pot of chocolate, could everyone put a pound in? That's basically the principle of crowdfunding. Lots of consumer facing companies, challenger banks, pizza brands, I'm just thinking what I've seen recently, effectively try and raise money from the crowd. So instead of going to a venture capital or private equity or IPOing a company because it doesn't make sense, they say to themselves, I'm making something I believe people want. Maybe I can go and get people in increments of £10, £100, £1,000 to invest in my company, as opposed to typically if people angel invest directly in my company, check sizes are usually about £100,000 or more. So crowdfunding is essentially rumbling the crowd and saying, do you want a tiny stake in my business? No problem. You can do it for as small as £10 or £100 or £1,000. Now, why am I doing that when it's not really going to make a dent in the kind of fundraise that I need to do in the summer? I really want to activate people who've not thought about doing this before to do it. Typically, also, women are minority angel investors, and it's not about the money they have. It's because women typically keep their money in real estate or in the bank, whereas men typically invest it more prolifically. So my thought process is, if I can get people to do £10, £100, £1,000, because my business is credible, we've got really good contracts, we're not a sort of startup that has no business, and I've done this before. If I can activate people to do that, even their first angel investment that's small, if it's £100 this year, maybe they'll do £1,000 in someone else next year, and £10,000 in 10 years in someone else. So effectively, I know that women need to find more pools of capital, and it's not coming from up here. So it needs to come from down here. Now, the journey may help people here because, for example, I run a global B2B tech company, right? And that's one type of thing. But what happens if you're doing... I was using an example yesterday. What happens if you're doing something, a local shop in Brighton, and you need some money for the rent, you've got a really great business idea, lots of people want to support you, but it's all in small amounts. You know, you really want to get people to club together. So it's a little bit community-based. Yeah. So essentially, I am doing that, very unconventional, given I've IPO'd a company to do a small crowdfund. But I'm hoping that what I can do is get people to think to themselves, I'd like to have a little tiny bit of Emma Sinclair's effort to build an empire. And that maybe that gets them thinking, okay, now I can be an investor. Oh, I'm receiving updates. Oh, that's interesting. I can see it growing. Maybe I'll put 5% of my pension into this. Maybe I'll put my pocket money into this. Maybe I'll put my Starbucks money for 6 months into this. Maybe I'll put what I'd usually bet on the Grand National. You know, it doesn't have to be huge chunks. So effectively, I'm hoping that, I like a big challenge, I'm hoping that over time, and lots of people are getting on board to help me with this, that we can be the first place to really solve the female funding challenge by activating everybody to think about doing this. I like a big, hairy, audacious goal. I'm not really sure when it's going to get to, but about 5,000 people have signed up already, and lots of people are going to start doing breakfasts and events. And, you know, you never know. You might have a Be My Angel event in a year where there's a pitch competition for a bunch of people wanting to raise money.
I love it. And I think that one of the reasons really wanted you to be here, Emma, is because this is a way that small business doesn't think. A lot of the time, small business says, can't go and get that premises. You know, or, oh, you know what, I don't know how I could raise that money, or, you know, I can't go and do that thing, or I can't expand my team. Well, actually, if you went out, you spread the message, you crowdfunded, you can solve most financial challenges. And isn't it funny?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe, right? The point is maybe, yeah. Right? Yeah. Maybe you've got 100 friends that you can ask for £100, and maybe that's a good way to get started. Maybe you've got 100 friends you can ask for £100,000, right? There's no limit. But, you know, so the point being, it's just like, it's a concept that generally people don't really do, or people do if they've got a massive retail brand. And I'm like, actually, I know tons of people. Why can't I do a slice of my round that way? The other thing to think about is, you know, years ago, all the tech companies and high growth companies used to IPO. They used to go on the stock exchange, used to be able to buy shares in them. Now, generally speaking, you can't invest in any of those things unless you're invested in a very complex fund that basically, unless anyone here is ultra high net worth, no one will have access to. So I also believe there's some democracy in saying, well, let's have a little piece of the pie of these businesses. So, you know, it is tied to my day job. I'm doing that. It is part of a larger fundraise I'm doing to raise money for my business this year. But also, I'm like, if I can do it, if I can reach audiences I wouldn't usually, the Express, the Mail, the whole bunch of people I wouldn't usually go to talk about my business, then hopefully good things will come from it.
No, but I think it's a fantastic concept and something that, you know, there's so many people in this room that do need extra money to build their businesses and kick it onto the next level. And they could absolutely do that, couldn't they, right? And also, sometimes, like Emma says, getting involved for the first time, you know, doing it and understanding how it works, going through that process with somebody else, like you said, heightens your awareness.
I might teach you something about your own business too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I'm like, I've been receiving updates about shares and stocks that I own for years. I don't know. Maybe I've learned something from it. It's probably helped me write my investor updates because I've read about 20,000 now. Mm. I've been doing it since I was 4. But, you know, I think there's a lot to be learned, but it's also about how you invest your hard-earned money. And almost like being part of a club. I think, which again is part of clearly what's happening here, right? I'm presuming a really great part of today is the lunch, wherever, or afterwards, wherever, well, not for the food, before anybody starts complaining about what you ate. You know, it's just getting to chat to other people that are going through the same thing. I mean, you need a gang. I've got a tribe. I mean, I need a tribe. I'm presuming everyone else does here.
100%, right? We're talking about that today, right? Community. And actually, it's really interesting that this is another thing. If you have community, it's another way that you can leverage community as well, right? It's interesting you just said that, especially as a bigger business. How important do you see community in business at the moment in terms of where things are going? How do you sort of see that where you are in the level that you're at?
Well, I don't know what we're going to call my level, but I'm going to feel really good when I leave here. thank you. And look, I've got lots of friends that are building mid-size and big businesses. And I'm sure we've all got friends that are doing all things at all levels. I do think that there's a type of entrepreneur I know who thinks and does things differently, where we really care about where we spend our money. If we raise money, we don't hire tons of people only to fire 80% of them if there's a downturn. Where we care about the people who are our customers and our clients. So speaking for myself, I have lots of highs, and then I also have lots of lows, bad days, things that go wrong, problems, you name it. And aside from my family, it is my tribe who high-five me, lift me up, make an introduction, try and sort me out. You know, I need to reach X or Y. Can you help? So for me, an absolutely enormous part. But, you know, and people work differently. But I've got in particular a couple of sort of, I was going to say gangs, but that sounds like they wander around town causing trouble. Although, to be honest, there is some truth in that too, as you can probably tell from my slightly sneaky sense of humor. But, you know, those are the people that really carry me a lot of the time and keep me going, because there are so many times where, you know, if you've raised money, what I said to you, everything comes at a price. If you've raised money, if you've got, you know, very public goals, or if you've got huge clients that are, you know, put a lot of burden on you when you, you know, are a relatively small business, you need people to tell you to keep going. So for me, my friends that do that are absolutely crucial. And I'm sure that's the same for lots of people here. You know, my husband, he often says that when we exit this business, he's going to write a book called Living with a Manic Depressive. But if you cared to get him to explain on that, he'd say, you know, there are some times when I'm like, come on, really killing it. And there are some times where it's just like so hard. You know, we've had COVID, we've had a pandemic, we've had a war, we've had a recession, we've had all kinds of things that happen on a regular basis that are beyond the day job are really, really stressful. So, you know, he lives through lots of sort of times that I'm feeling really challenged, and lots of times where I'm like, come on. And you know, so family are really crucial to me in that regard.
Absolutely. Well, look, massive, massive round of applause for him, man.
Hey everybody, Adam here, and I hope you loved today's episode. Hope you thought it was fabulous, and if you did, I'd like to ask you a small favour. Could you jump over and go and give the podcast a review? Of course, I'll be super grateful if that is a 5-star review. We're putting our all into this podcast for you, delivering you the content, giving you the secrets, and if you've enjoyed it, please go and give us a review and talk about what your favourite episode is perhaps. Every single month, I select someone from that review list to come to one of my exclusive Academy days and have lunch with me on the day, meeting hundreds of my clients. So if you want that to be you, then you're going to be in with a shout if you go and give us a review on iTunes. Please, of course, do remember to subscribe so you can get all the up-to-date episodes. Peace and love, and I'll see you very, very soon. Thank you.